We'll begin the message today by starting in the account of the Exodus. So if you would, you can begin turning to Exodus chapter 8. We're going to read four verses in rapid fire succession here with the aim of quickly developing a theme, and I'm confident that you will see the theme here in our reading very quickly. So we will begin here in the book of Exodus, chapter 8, and we'll begin at verse 32. Now here in verse 32, this is immediately following the fourth plague, the plague of flies. Exodus 8, 32, it says, "But Pharaoh hardened his heart at this time also, neither would he let the people go." Next, Exodus chapter 9, verse 12, and this is within the midst of the sixth plague of boils. Exodus 9, 12, it says, "But the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, and he did not heed them, just as the Lord had spoken to Moses." Next up, remaining in chapter 9, verse 34, this is after the seventh plague, the plague of hail. Exodus 9, 34, "And when Pharaoh saw that the rain, the hail, and the thunder had ceased, he sinned yet more, and he hardened his heart, he and his servants." And then now for the fourth verse that we'll read, I continue on to chapter 10 now of Exodus. Chapter 10, verse 20, after the eighth plague, the plague of locusts. Exodus 10, verse 20, "But the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart. He did not let the children of Israel go." Of course, the theme here to see is the hardening of Pharaoh's heart. Now, there are other verses that talk about how God hardened Pharaoh's heart, and how Pharaoh hardened his own heart. I picked these four because the way we read it, you get a sense of it's almost like a tennis match. You're seeing that ball go back and forth. Well, God's hardening Pharaoh's heart. Pharaoh hardens his own heart. Then kind of like watching a tennis match, especially with quality players, professional players, when you watch a tennis match and the ball's being hit back and forth over the net, if play continues and it goes on, it gets more intense. The pressure mounts. It increases. Likewise, as we read this account going through these plagues, as Pharaoh incrementally had more of a hardened heart, that pressure builds. Using the analogy of tennis, if you've ever set up a tennis net, the way that it happens is you string a net between two poles typically. When you set up the net, it's a little bit loose. It droops in the middle. The same could be said for a volleyball net. And the way you tighten the net is with a ratchet and a handle. And you turn that ratchet, and as you turn it, that net gets tighter and tighter. Kind of similar to what happened here with Pharaoh's heart. With each of these successive plagues, it's as if that ratchet is being turned just a little bit more. Pharaoh's heart's just a little bit tighter and a little bit more hard. Now, I've heard various messages over the years where the speaker will describe, well, why would God harden Pharaoh's heart? It's not my intent to necessarily look into why the design and the intent of why God would harden the heart of Pharaoh. It is discussed in chapter 7 of Exodus, if you would like to take a look. Some of that design and purpose is explicitly mentioned. But no, rather than the design and input of why Pharaoh's heart was hardened, I'd like to look at the result, the outcome, what happened because Pharaoh's heart was hardened. Because Pharaoh continued to harden his heart, a new reality was set up, a new situation for the land. Yes, it involves the Egyptians, it involved Pharaoh, but this new reality was especially important to the Israelites and to Moses and Aaron. By the time that Passover had arrived after the plagues. A new reality had arrived. And in order to help describe this new situation and what it meant, I'm going to use the aid of two images. Now, for those who are tuned in on the cybercast, here in a moment, on the video, you will be able to see the images. For those who are connected audio only, I will do my best to paint a picture of what you are seeing. You can go ahead and bring up the first image now. The first image that you see now on your screen is what's commonly called a rocker switch. It's called a rocker switch because it's designed for you to rock between one of two positions. On the image that you're seeing, the two positions are a 1 and a 0. You'll typically see these switches on electronics, appliances, that sort of thing. I took this picture from the back of my printer that I printed these notes on. A rocker switch will allow you, when in the 1 position, it closes the electrical circuit, and power is able to go to the device, and you're able to use it. If you switch over to the 0 position, the circuit is opened. Electricity cannot flow and you cannot use the device. Well, what does this have to do with the situation that was brought on by the hardening of Pharaoh's heart and bringing along the Passover and the Exodus? If you think about it, by the time that the Passover had arrived, it was a very binary situation. That's what that switch, that rocker switch, demonstrates. It's binary, and binary in the simplest terms means only one of two possible conditions can exist. It's an either-or situation. When Passover arrived, it was absolutely binary. If you were a firstborn, you were either under the blood of the doorpost and you lived, or you were not and you died. There is no account in Scripture of an individual who became gravely ill and somehow survived and managed to live. You were either under the blood of the doorpost and lived, or you were not and you died. It was absolutely binary. You could say in a figurative sense that a certain piece of real estate was disappearing. A very small parcel of land was being taken off the market. That little piece of land is the middle ground. There was absolutely no middle ground at this point in time. Through the events of the hardening of Pharaoh's heart and taking the land to the point of the Passover and the Exodus, the distinction was drawn between God and between God and his way and Pharaoh and everything else. It had truly become binary. The second picture that we'll show here in just a moment is really an extension or expansion of the concept of a situation being binary. You can go ahead and bring it up now. And this second picture is a white picket fence. Now, I may not be using the correct terminology here, but I'll describe it as the slats continuing up and then coming to sharp points. And the picture is taken from such a perspective as to really accentuate those points on the fence. Now, you've likely heard and are familiar with the saying, sitting on the fence or riding the fence. And this expression conveys a mindset or approach of simultaneously holding devotion and interest or attention to opposing ways or approaches, and seeing which one works out for the best. Can also be expressed as hedging our bets. Now understand, this is not a knock at the Israelites. But for hundreds of years, they had been sitting on the fence. Their existence now, through the years, through the very nature of their situation, they had lived a mixed experience. There was undoubtedly an awareness of and a familiarity with God and his ways that would have come down through the oral teachings, the oral testaments, the traditions, the practices. But there was also the reality of them being immersed in Egyptian culture and surviving in it. They came to see Egyptian society as being their provider. Recall in Numbers 11, later on, we can go ahead and turn there, how the Israelites would longingly look back at the food and when they were fed. Numbers 11. Numbers 11, verse 5. Looking back longingly, it says, "We remember the fish which we ate freely in Egypt, the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, and the garlic." I have to believe that there's at least some truth here and that they were fed well and they ate well. But I don't for a minute believe that they wanted truly to go back to the entire experience. They were wanting to pick and choose. They were wanting to go back to sitting on the fence. Yes, we will be devoted to God, but hey, over here on the other side of the fence, there's good food where we ate freely. But through the hardening of Pharaoh's heart, through the plagues and arriving at the Passover, a clearer line had been drawn. You were either following God and submitting to him, or you weren't. The fence slats became just a little bit more pointed and a little bit less comfortable. No, the Israelites did not just jump off the fence and stay off the fence. We know the account in the succeeding years. All the struggles going through the wilderness. But at least at this point in time, it became just a little bit less comfortable to be on the fence. This same situation was made clear over and over. This new reality of the situation being binary and not being able to sit on the fence and have mixed devotion. This would play out over and over in the following days, months, and years. Let's go now to Exodus 14. Fast forward a little bit in time. Exodus 14, 30. Following the crossing of the Red Sea. Now, in the following years, through the events that would transpire, especially through the wilderness, God would continually lead Israel to points of clarity. Over and over, it would be in front of their eyes. Exodus 14, verse 30. "So the Lord saved Israel that day out of the hand of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore. Thus Israel saw the great work which the Lord had done in Egypt, so the people feared the Lord and believed the Lord and his servant Moses." Again, a very binary situation as you stood on that far end of the Red Sea. Perhaps the songs of Moses and Miriam were being composed and even sung. You looked back at the Red Sea. It would have to dawn on you. You were either on this side or you were not. Not being on this side would mean possibly that, as is the case for Pharaoh, and the soldiers being underwater and dead. The fence posts became just a little more uncomfortable to sit on. At least for a time, the Israelites began to get off the fence in regards to their devotion. In verse 31, it says, they feared the Lord and believed the Lord and his servant Moses. But unfortunately, there was a tendency to always want to climb back up on the fence. The Israelites would continue to struggle with their devotion, attention, and obedience. This despite the fact that God continually would make the situation clear. But the thing about sitting on the fence is, no matter how hard you try, you eventually have to pick a side and climb down. Deuteronomy chapter 1, we'll begin in verse 34. Deuteronomy, verse 34. This was referenced in Dr. Ward's sermon on the first day about an entire generation perishing in the wilderness, that they would not be allowed into that good land, that land that had been sworn to the fathers. Because of a continual split devotion between God and ultimately self, an entire generation would perish and not see that good land. Deuteronomy 1:34. And the Lord heard the sound of your words and was angry and took an oath, saying, surely not one of these men of this evil generation shall see that good land of which I swore to give to your fathers, except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh. He shall see it, and to him and his children I am giving the land on which he walked. And notice what it says, because he wholly followed the Lord. And going on, it also mentions that, of course, Joshua would enter. But notice how that ended there in verse 36. Holy, not H-O-L-Y, but W-H-O-L-L-Y. Holy, entirely, completely followed the Lord. What a contrast with the group as a whole of the Israelites, the children of Israel. An entire generation would not enter because they would not completely follow God. Their devotions were mixed, and now they had reached the end of the line. God would not allow them to be in that position continually. So this is an appropriate time to pivot to the here and now, to us on our journey. 1 Corinthians 10. Let's go to 1 Corinthians 10. Hopefully you are already connecting the dots in your mind, seeing how we truly face the same challenge that Israel faced thousands of years ago on their journey, that we cannot have a mixed approach in our devotion. If there's a pivot point, a pivot scripture to come to the here and now, it's certainly 1 Corinthians 10. 1 Corinthians 10 will begin in verse 6. It says, now these things became our examples to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. Do not become idolaters as were some of them. Down to verse 11 now. Now all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. Now this letter written to the church in Corinth is in the context of idolatry. Now when idolatry is stripped down to the bare essentials, it's ultimately a devotion to self. That's what the congregation here in Corinth was dealing with. Really a mixed devotion between God and self. And self is, as we've heard, is one of those things we must overcome. And while specific events that happened to Israel are mentioned here in 1 Corinthians 10, notice in verse 11, it says all these things. The entire experience of Israel going forward in the Exodus and beyond, it's instructive to us. Throughout the years, Israel struggled with holding a singular devotion to God. Do you ever think about how we are doubly blessed to have recorded what's here in 1 Corinthians 10, this letter to Corinth? Not only does Paul writing point out the events experienced by Israel at that time and that they've become our examples, but we're also able to look back at Corinth at this time and with a deeper and richer understanding of what it was like in Corinth during that day. It was literally a worldly place, being a center of trade and commerce for the world coming and going. As such, as a society, it definitely would have had the pulls, the temptations to take away devotion from God. We struggle with the devotional pulls that both the Israelites and the Corinthians faced and fought with. I think we've hopefully taken the time to stop and think that to the extent that we do not heed to God's Spirit, that we do not listen to it, we do not let it convict us, we don't let it inform our conscience, to the degree that we do not do that, we begin to resemble the Israelites at this time. No different if we're not heeding God's Spirit. So what are those pulls and temptations that can take us away from God? I could go down a list. I could take the next 5, 10, 15 minutes and explicitly list things that commonly and individually we struggle with. But it's really not necessary. If you stop to think about it, you know what it is that pulls you away from God. If you're like me, you have an awareness. You know what it is that makes you want to perhaps tiptoe up to the fence and stay on those toes, kind of look up, look over what's on the other side. And if you let that grow, you may be tempted to, well, pull up a step stool and get up on the fence and just kind of survey the scene, if you will. If you're like me, you know what those things are. I'll say this. If you're blessed to live years and decades in this life, specifically to grow into adulthood and beyond, God will absolutely bring about events in your life that will help make it clear. It will be clear that there is God and His way, and then there is everything else. Just like the events leading up to the Exodus through the hardening of Pharaoh's heart and beyond, these events brought clarity to the Israelites, God is showing and will show you the need to commit to Him and His way. God is performing a work in your life. Sometimes it is trials that show us this. Trials are often compared to a storm. It's an interesting way to think about it. Let's say you are sitting on top of the fence in terms of devotion, and the trial of a storm arrives. Well, the winds will blow. If you're sitting on the fence before the storm comes, you might get blown off on the wrong side. It's a gamble. How will you come out on the other end of the trial? Try to stay on top too long and you may end up on the wrong side. But it's not only trials. Just life happening teaches us. Eventually, it's God's way, and then there's everything else. Experiencing just the aging process. The aging process teaches us that eventually this ride ends. This life is not what it's ultimately about. Hopefully we pay attention to that and we learn those lessons that really it is about what God has in store for us. It's not the here and now. Again, you have to decide. Also worth noting is that it can be a pull, a temptation to a younger person growing up in the church to believe that devotion can be divided between God and His way and what is not of God. I'm qualified to say this because I speak from experience. I shudder to think back in my younger years. A mixed devotion. I sometimes marvel looking back, well, how did I end up on the right side? But then other times, it's not so much a marveling because I can look back and see God's hand in my life. God is also performing a work in your life. And to the youth, I would say that the sooner you can clearly see that you cannot commit to opposing views, God's way and another way, the sooner you see that, the better. If you sit on the fence too long, even if you eventually end up on the right side, those pointed slats, they begin to hurt. They could leave lasting and lingering pain. They can leave scars on your rear end. You eventually will come down. We've talked about the present, but let's talk about the future. In the final sense, the outlook regarding our salvation is, in a way, truly binary, just like that switch we saw. Yes, there are parables. There's the parable of the talents. In one sense, yes, there's varying levels of rewards for those who attain salvation. But in terms of life and death, there is a point. If you think about that fence, it is kind of a pun, but there is a fixed point in time there upon the return of our Savior and the judgment that comes. Regarding our salvation, it is binary, and it will be in the future. Choose God's way and live, or choose something else and cease to exist. This is expressed in several ways. We could spend much time looking at this, but we're just going to look at three different ways that this is expressed, that ultimately becomes life or death. Let's go to Matthew 25. Matthew 25, and we'll begin in verse 31. This is made plain for us. Now don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying that everything is in life is like that switch that we saw, that it's a one or a zero, a yes or a no. I understand that life is complex, and it's a series of decisions that we have to make, and not everything is clear-cut and that kind of scenario. Sometimes we're faced with difficult decisions where we have to pick even the least worst outcome. However, again, a fixed point in time, when our Savior returns, it will be made clear whether we placed God first. It will be binary. Matthew 25, 31. When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the holy angels with him, then he will sit on the throne of his glory, and all the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate them one from another as a shepherd divides his sheep from the goats. It goes on to describe, well, the attributes of the sheep, what happens to them, and the attributes of the goats, what happens to them. There is no in between. There are the sheep and there are the goats. Think about some of the parables that were given. The parable of the wheat and the tares. You're either a wheat or you're a tare. The wise and foolish virgins. The faithful servant and the evil servant. Consider all of these parables. It's like that Passover evening. You are either in or you are out. Let's go next to James. James chapter 4, verse 8. We'll read a direct instruction about how we are to be singular in our approach to God, not trying to simultaneously be devoted to God and to something else. James 4, verse 8. Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. Lament and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning and your joy to gloom. Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and he will lift you up. Being double-minded is tiring. It's exhausting. It ultimately catches up with you. It cannot be sustained forever. Live long enough and you find that having mixed devotion, attention, obedience becomes impossible. Let's go next to Romans chapter 6. Romans chapter 6, we'll read verse 16. Here in writing to the church in Rome, Paul provides an analogy. You're always serving something. You're always serving something. In the end, it is God or it is something else. This was also brought out on the first holy day. You cannot serve two masters. It's like that switch. Romans 6, 16. Do you not know that to whom you present yourselves slaves to obey, you are that one's slaves whom you obey, whether of sin leading to death or of obedience leading to righteousness? And there's the outcome. It's very simple. It's easy to see. Paul asks, do you not know? Do you not know? If we have eyes, we can see. Pharaoh hardened his heart. God hardened Pharaoh's heart. The Israelites and the Egyptians were brought to a point where there was absolutely no question about the distinction between God's way and everything else. So we are called to the truth now. We have decisions to make. Just like those events at that time, ultimately, in the end, there is God's way and there is everything else. I'd like to conclude in the book of Joshua. You can begin turning there. The title of this message is Choose for Yourself This Day. Choose for Yourself This Day, taken from what we will conclude with here in Joshua, Joshua 24. Joshua lived a long life. It'd be interesting in the resurrection to talk to Joshua because he saw so much. He was there as the events unfolded with the Exodus and in the years following through the wilderness and into that good land. He did get to live over and enter into that good promised land. Joshua here in his final days, as he writes what we're about to read, or speaks what we're about to read, he saw a lot, and that wisdom had accumulated. He witnessed the struggles between God and the Israelites, and now, years later, having entered into that land, he is in his last days. If you have time, I would encourage you to read both chapters 23 and 24, some of the last words from Joshua before he dies. Essentially, he's saying, flip the switch, come off the fence. Because he's seen it so many times, the mixed devotion and love. And he saw the need to be singular in the approach to God. And he brings it to a point. He says, choose for yourself this day. This day is every day for the rest of your life. It's a choice you have to make day in and day out. The choice to follow God. Joshua 24, verse 14. Now therefore, fear the Lord. And echoing here 1 Corinthians 5, fear the Lord, serve him in sincerity and truth. And put away the gods which your fathers served on the other side of the river and in Egypt. Serve the Lord. And if it seems evil to you to serve the Lord, choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the river were the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord.